a little one. We want to welcome Tully Duncan Littlefield into the world. And congratulations to his proud mama and papa, Amy Littlefield and Daniel Patterson. To see our conversation with our former producer, Amy Littlefield, about being pregnant during the time of the pandemic, go to democracynow.org. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is working with as few people on site as possible. The majority of our remarkable team is working from home to prevent community spread. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tay Maria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, Adriana Contreras, and Maria Tarasena. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Dennis Moynihan, Becca Staley, Miriam Barnard. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Portland. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, Philomath on 104.3 FM, and in Hood River on 91.9 FM. Now, here's your weather for this morning. Skies remain clear overnight, allowing for rapid overnight and morning cooling around the area. Many residents around the Pacific Northwest are waking up to 30-degree readings. A strong ridge of high pressure and offshore flow will once again push temperatures in the upper 60s. Tonight's skies will stay clear, and overnight lows will be in the upper 30s. Tomorrow, sunny skies return after another chilling morning. Highs will be in the upper 60s again. Upper-level wind moving onshore on Wednesday will increase the morning cloud cover. Wednesday may start off more cloudy in the morning, but end with sun breaks by afternoon. Still no rain in sight for now. And of course, coming up is more talk radio with your host, Cecil. So keep it locked right here on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, KBOO will be sticking to our regularly scheduled programming as much as possible, but there are some limitations that we're working with, so we appreciate your understanding and support. We are committed to keeping our staff, volunteers, and programmers safe and healthy, so we are transitioning to producing programs remotely. For updates on KBOO's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, visit our website at kboo.fm/COVID-19. That's kboo.fm/COVID-19.
KBOO.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives, and we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
Welcome to More Talk Radio, and now here's your host, Cecil. Cecil, you're on.
Good morning. Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and 90.7 via the World Wide Web, kboo.fm. Today is Monday, the 13th of April, 2020. I'm flying solo this morning, except really not solo, because I have many co-pilots, and you are among the co-pilots. I hope you will join as part of this conversation this morning to pilot this aircraft to its destination. You may do so by giving us a call. Our number here in the studio, 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. Now, as many of you, I hope, are able to maintain your health and that you are provided for, all your needs are provided for. But as we are so well aware of, and as a couple of news reports that we heard just previously to this on Democracy Now!, this pandemic impacts people in many communities, and disproportionately to communities that have had a history of not receiving proper treatment or attention in our society. I want to just share an article I've read from Charles Blow, columnist for the New York Times, and it was his reflection about how we are approaching this pandemic and what it means to many, many people. An article that was published last week, April 5th, 2020, Charles Blow wrote an article that's entitled "Social Distancing is a Privilege." He writes, "People like to say that the coronavirus is no respecter of race, class, or country, that the disease COVID-19 is mindless and will infect anybody it can. In theory, that is true. But in practice, in the real world, this virus behaves like others, screeching like a heat-seeking missile towards the most vulnerable in society. And this happens not because it prefers them, but because they are more exposed, more fragile, and more ill. When the vulnerable portions of society looks like varies from country to country, but in America, that vulnerability is highly intersected with race and poverty. Early evidence from cities and states already shows that Black people are disproportionately affected by the virus in devastating ways, as ProPublica reported in Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, as of Monday, as of Friday morning, a week ago, this past Friday, 81% of the deaths were Black people. Black people make up only 26% of that county. As for Chicago, Sunday, WEBZ reported Sunday that 70% of COVID-19 deaths are Blacks, and pointed out about surrounding Cook County, while Black residents make up only 23% of the population in that county, they account for 58% of the COVID-19 deaths. And the Detroit News reported at least 40% of those killed by the novel coronavirus in Michigan so far are Black, a percentage that far exceeds the proportion of African Americans in the destroyed region and state. Charles Blows continues, "If this pattern holds true across other states and cities, this virus could have a catastrophic impact on Black people in this country. And yet we are still not seeking an abundance of news coverage or national governmental response that centers on these racial disparities. Many states haven't even released race-specific data on cases and deaths, and the federal government hasn't either. Partly for this reason, we are left with deceptive and deadly misinformation. The perception that this is a jet setters disease or a spring breakers disease or a, quote, Chinese virus, end of quote, as President Trump likes to say, must be laid to rest. The idea that this virus is an equal opportunity killer must itself be killed. And we must dispense with the callous message that the best defense can we have against the disease, something that each of us can control. We can all just stay home and keep social distance. As a report last month by the Economic Policy Institute pointed out, less than 1 in 5 Black workers and roughly 1 in 6 Hispanic workers are able to work from home. As the report pointed out, only 9.2% of workers in the lowest quartile of the wage distribution can telework, compared with 61.5% of the workers in the highest quartile. Lowe continues, if you touch people for a living in elder care or child care, if you cut or fix hair, if you clean their spaces or cook their foods, if you drive their cars or build their houses, you can't do that from home. Staying at home is a privilege. Social distancing is a privilege. People who can't much make terrible choices. Stay home and risk starvation or go to work and risk contagion. And this isn't just happening here. It is happening with poor people around the world, New Delhi to Mexico City. If they go to work, they must often use crowded mass transportation because low-wage workers can't necessarily afford to own a car or call a cab. Such is the life of the working poor, of those slightly above poverty but still struggling. Our entire discussion around this virus is stained with economic elitism. In social media commentary about images of packed buses and crowds of delivery workers outside restaurants, people chastise Black and brown people for not always being inside. Many of those doing the chastising do so from comfortable homes with sufficient money and food. People cannot empathize with what it truly means to be poor in this country, to live in a too small space with too many people, to not have enough money to buy food for a long duration or anywhere to store it if they did. People don't know what it's like to live in a food desert where fresh fruit and vegetables are unavailable and nutrient-deficient junk food is cheap and exists in abundance. People are quick to criticize folks for crowding into local fast food restaurants to grab something to eat. Not everyone can afford to order Grubhub or Fresh Direct. Furthermore, in a nation where too many Black people have been made to feel that their lives are constantly under threat, the existence of yet another produces less of a panic. The ability to panic becomes a privilege existing among those who really have to do it. And Charles Blow concludes his article with these words, "I wholeheartedly encourage everyone who can to stay home, but I'm also aware enough to know that not everyone can or will, and that it is not simply a pathological disregard for the common good. If you are sheltered in a place in an ivory tower or even a comfortable cul-de-sac or a smartly appointed apartment, and your greatest concern is boredom and leftover food, please stop scolding those scratching to survive." Charles Blow wrote that article for the New York Times, dated April 5th, 2020. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott. And this morning we want to talk about COVID-19 and its impact on our communities and how, in fact, that economic and racial inequality to impact how we are dealing with this pandemic and those who are suffering. The inequalities manifests itself if you are in a detention center or immigration or jails or prisons or farm workers or living in native communities. Those, as Charles Blow mentioned, who are unable to work from home, for those who do not have access to Wi-Fi and unable to telecommute, how do we respond to these things? And what does it reveal about our society as we manage through this pandemic? Will it unmask the inequalities that are so evident for so many people? Or will we eventually just go back to the way things were? Now is an opportunity to unmask things and see things as they are and change things. So among the questions I have for you today, and I invite you to give us a call at 503-231-8187. Among those questions are, one, are we becoming aware of the inequalities in our society by this pandemic? And if so, what may we do about it to unmask it? And what may we do to change it? In a few minutes, I'm going to share with you just one struggle in another part of this country in the Midwest. But manifests itself, it's an illustration of how inequality continues to exist, and that this pandemic impact poor people in a way that they suffer more. That they become ill more quickly, and more often than not, they are the ones who are dying. How are we changing things in our society? And will this pandemic allow us to become a better society? Give us a call and share your thoughts. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. Are you able to live at home? Are you able to practice social distancing? Do you have the social privilege to practice social distancing?
Cecil, I just wanted to let you know we have a caller on the line.
And we'll go to a caller. Let me remind those who are waiting, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's go to our caller. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing, Cecil?
I'm well. How are you?
You know, staying alive.
Staying alive. All right.
I'm practicing, you know, and I got to say, I heard the definition from your show last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago now, but social distancing is the wrong word. It's physical distancing that we should be practicing. I believe you and Celeste were talking about that a few weeks ago, which I really love the term,
yes.
And I've been sharing that with my friends.
So
I've been practicing physical distancing as much as I can. However, and this is one thing that I wanted to, I just get so upset at watching all these privileged celebrities, really rich people, telling me to stay home. You know, who's going to pay my bills? I'm not going to have a home if I don't have work, which I almost didn't have work for a while. But now I'm in a position where I have more hours and I have to continue working. So I am exposing myself at the risk because I don't want to be homeless. And so, you know, seeing Bruce Willis wearing pajamas and telling everybody to stay home and that we're inconsiderate if I can't just stay home, it's just a real slap in the face to the working class people who have nothing. We have nothing. I can't stay at my home. You know, I need to go and, work. And then I need to go and buy food because I can't stock up. I can't, you know, go to the Fred Meyer's and spend $500 grocery shopping. I can only do 150 at a time, you know, which isn't that much. But yeah, so I just wanted to say, you know, it's a really weird dynamic to be in, because on one end, people are, you know, we're self-policing ourselves now. You know, people are trying to be like, oh, why aren't you staying home? And then, you know, on the other end of it, it's just like, because I have to, you know, I have to pay bills. So, but with that being said, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up. It's very unfortunate hearing how this is now just tearing through different communities of color, and particularly what I see the problem is poverty. And if, you know, before this whole corona epidemic or pandemic, I should say, there was statistics that were suggesting that Black people in particular, there's higher rates when they're giving birth with death, that, you know, there's death, you know, all across the board. And I think that's mortality. I think it's the reflection of the hospitals, or, you know, the fact that, you know, they might not be coming to the hospital until it's a big issue because of health insurance. You know, it's a direct amplification of the poverty issue that I see. And so what I wanted to remind people of is 2 months ago, this was tearing through rich people. And fortunately, you know, they're not dying, or maybe unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, they're not dying at the same rates as the poor people because they have the adequate medical care.
Yes.
You know, Harvey Weinstein, Prince Charles or Prince Andrew, one of those people, these people don't grocery shop, you know, with, you know, they're, you know what I mean? These circles.
Definitely.
Yeah. So this was tearing through their community first. But it's just, you know, all these communities, you know, now, you know, they're probably going to the hospital at the last minute. There's no hospital beds, there's no ventilators, you know, whatever it is. And now, you know, now we're seeing this genocide on poor people. And hearing the administration basically just be like, well, some people are going to die. This whole thought process is because they can afford the medical treatments that they need to live, and the poor people can't. Anyway, just my 2 cents.
Well, thank you. Hey, before you go, could you, are you comfortable telling us about what type of work you do? That I just want people to get a sense of, you know, how, you know, why people have to work.
Right. I actually work for a catering company that delivers food to hospital cafeterias and also grocery stores. So we basically make the grab and go salad rolls and such that you'll see. And so at first, a lot of the hospitals, they weren't sure what they were going to be doing. And I'd have to go to the cafeterias. Yeah. Now they actually, at first, we thought we were going to be getting more orders to the cafeteria because they stopped doing the salad bars and the such. And we thought they were going to increase their orders, but then they took the visitors and guests out. And so now we lost a lot of hours. I was down to like 2 to 3 days. So I'm hoping, I hope my Trump socialist check comes in soon. I think it's funny calling it's Trump's socialist check. It just blows Republicans' minds when you call it that. But
I like that. Okay.
I hope it comes because I got to figure out rent. But I'm delivering to grocery stores now. So.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for doing your work and trying to be as safe as possible.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Cecil. You too.
Okay, great. Our number here, 503-231-8187. And darn it, I forgot to get the name of the caller, but he was sharing.
His name was Robbie, Cecil.
Rob, thank you, Robbie. Robbie was sharing about his work and the type of work he does that requires him to be in the public. He doesn't have the opportunity or the privilege of social distancing, and his observation of how working people are becoming more the victims of this pandemic. Robbie also mentioned, you know, offered the word of practicing using physical distancing as opposed to social distancing, but he also reflected on how this pandemic continues to impact different peoples and different communities. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. If you have a story about how this pandemic impact you, or are you a person who did not have the privilege, as Robbie mentioned, of being like Bruce Willis and sitting around in your pajamas and talking about working people and how they shaming working people because they have to work. What is it that you are faced, and what are some of the challenges you face? Recently, as we await your phone calls here at 503-231-8187, I want to share with you a story about which highlights some of the challenges that different communities have. And as Robbie mentioned earlier about healthcare and the access to healthcare, I became aware of a struggle in Chicago, and you may be aware of a Chicago emergency room being shut down last week, a few days ago. And there's an online petition trying to reverse the decision. But why is that a concern for us? You might live, many hundreds of miles away from Chicago. Because I think it's illustrative of the challenges that working people, poor and brown people have, indigenous people have in facing this pandemic and the access to healthcare, as Robbie mentioned. So I'll read this article from Labor Notes and talks about what was happening in Chicago's South Side. And the by Alan Moss, wrote it a couple of days ago. Alan writes that the emergency room of a public hospital in the heart of Chicago, mostly Black South Side, is being closed down for a month by Cook County's officials just as the coronavirus pandemic is surging in Chicago. The nonsensical justification is that the ER needs to be refitted to handle surging coronavirus pandemic. Nurses and staff at Provident Hospital first learned by email last Friday, and this is a week ago Friday, that the ER would be closed as of Monday, April 6th. As for notifying the community, county officials left that to the press release. The National Nurse United had a press conference and rally during their Monday afternoon shift change to demand some answers from the Cook County Health System. Dennis Kosich, who works one of the shifts, says, they say they want to make the emergency room safer. We agree with that. It should be safer. But you don't do it by sending an announcement out on Friday that the ER is going to close on Monday. So far, Chicago has trailed other pandemic hotspots like New York City and Detroit in its number of cases, but the curve started rising fast last week. The pandemic takes a course it has in other cities. Southside neighborhoods like Bronzeville will be devastated in the coming weeks. Now, officials say that the Provident ER needed to be renovated to ensure that the staff can isolate COVID-19 sufferers and maintain social distancing during their care. But the nurses said in a statement that the county had known this since it began preparing for a crisis in January, yet it gave less than 3 days' notice of its solution to staff. And it continues, just to talk about how it impacts that community, mostly Black community, low-income community, and just how this impacts people in the horrible ways. Managers of the health system say that the people served by the Bronzeville Hospital can rely on emergency rooms at other hospitals. But Provident patients are walk-up, say nurses, and the next hospital is a 20-minute drive away. This article continues about how it impacts and how poor people, Black Chicagoans, have a shorter live shorter lives. And it talks about the inequalities of this health system. There is an online petition in change.org asking people to reopen the ER at Provident. Go to change.org, search for Provident ER in Chicago. You'll find the petition and you have the opportunity to sign it. But this is just a story of many stories of how inequalities continue to exist and how this pandemic has the ability to uncover, unmask the inequalities, the economic and social and health inequalities in our society. So for you, have the opportunity to call in and share your stories. How are you surviving? And how are ways in which in your community inequality is manifesting itself? And more, and also, what do you think can be done either while we're in the midst of this pandemic or later to address the inequality that these things reveal?
Cecil, you have a call from Wade.
Okay. Well, we let's take our next call from Wade. Good morning.
Hey. How are you, Cecil?
Good morning.
Yes, and I don't want to take this personally because it's all over the place, but I'm really getting tired. I'm only 64 years young, and I'm really getting tired of being told to be careful. We all know this. There's other idiot rhetoric like, wash your hands while singing happy birthday twice. You can't just count to 10 or 20, whatever that would be. We're not in kindergarten, and it's not you. It's all over the place, okay? It's all over the media, it's really older than that, okay? It's like you're leaving home, and you're leaving after a night at your family's, and somebody has to say, okay, drive carefully. No, I'm going to drive reckless, okay? I don't want to have any wrecks, so I'm going to drive reckless. I'm using a W in front of it. But you see what I'm getting at?
I want you to expand on that. Why do you think that people are repeating these adages in terms of changing social behavior or encouraging certain types of behaviors?
Well, you can encourage behavior without talking to us like we're little children. Again, when I say you, it's not you personally. It's all over the place. Amy Goodman does it, you know. So that's my thoughts.
Is it because people think that we are acting like children and not behaving responsibly?
It's just pandemic in the media to treat us like little children. I could think of many more examples, but it's not coming to mind right this minute. But you can just listen. You'll hear them again.
Yeah, you know, one thing I would suggest is to look and review how different, not similar, emergencies have happened throughout our country in our history. And I think if you look back during World War II, you hear certain things that are said over and over again in terms of encouraging certain types of behavior. And throughout our history, I think that's just part of as a society. And
I made a lot of fun of Uncle Sam, but then at one point I had to wonder if this guy was actually married, you know, this mythological character, and then I made up a name, if it would have to be Samantha, and then I saw on some website that during the war, or on some cable channel, what it was, there was this little, like, Hints from Heloise, and it was Aunt Samantha says to do this or do that.
Right.
Just basic, you know, sanitary stuff or, you know, home tips and that kind of thing. But because this is a meat-borne illness, I'm wondering, is anybody taking any statistics on do vegetarians get this disease? And if they do they recover better? I'm not worried about it at all. Yes, I am being careful. The other thing I want people to think about is breathe deep. Most people don't breathe the bottom third of their lungs, and many the bottom half. So really exhale completely and take some deep breaths.
All right.
Beautiful.
Words of wisdom.
Hey, one other thing. There's a talk about oxygen and such. There's 50% more oxygen in a 60-degree room than in a 70-degree room. That's free oxygen.
Thank you, Wade.
Peace. Have a virus-free day.
All right. You're listening to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. I am Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Wade called, began his conversation by sharing his frustration of being told repeatedly certain behaviors that we should engage in or certain practices, and frustration by being, talked down to. But I think as we spoke in our conversation that maybe perhaps we need to hear these things over and over again, because some of us learn differently and it takes a while. I also want to encourage everyone in terms of getting access to knowledge, and I think Wade said a couple of things that weren't factually accurate in terms of transmission of the disease, but make sure that your information is accurate. So in terms of the disease and how it's transmitted. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We're talking about COVID-19. We mentioned, we began our conversation this morning by reading an article from New York Times columnist Charles Blow, who spoke or wrote about the call for social distancing and how it reveals the inequalities in our society. We spoke about how indigenous, black and brown communities are disproportionately impacted by this health crisis, that the inability to access adequate health care means that many people who are poor, who are black and brown, living in impoverished neighborhoods, are impacted by this this pandemic in a very, very horrible way. Whether or not this will reveal ways in which we can change our society when we get to the other side, if we get to the other side. I mentioned this morning our online petition about what's happening in one hospital in Chicago, how the emergency room and in a black neighborhood has been closed to prepare it to deal with this COVID-19. But the reality is that people in that neighborhood, then where will they go? The nearest hospital being a 20-minute car ride away, which makes it difficult for people who do not have access to transportation. It's a catch-22 in many ways.
Cecil, I just want to let you know we have Bill on the line.
Okay. And before we go to Bill, let me remind you that our numbers are 503-231-8187. Give us a call with your thoughts about how we are dealing with this pandemic, and are you maintaining, do you have the privilege of maintaining physical distancing? But let's go to Bill, who has some thoughts for all of us. Good morning, Bill. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning. Thank you. You know, I have been, I'm considered an essential worker. And it's interesting to me that we talk about, you know, protections, like with respect to having access to health care, insurance that allows you to receive timely help. I am fascinated too by this idea that if an employer can have you deemed essential, that in essence you do not have the right to not work your regular work schedule, no matter how dangerous things may be out there. And I'm just wondering if when we talk about those who are vulnerable, is this a new moment by which this is something that as labor laws and other things happen, if this is something mm-hmm. to consider, like at what right do I have to tell my employer that if you cannot provide or guarantee a safe work environment with something like a pandemic happening. Now, if it were mm-hmm. something related to OSHA, like ladders or, right. you know, sharp tools or things like that, you'd have certain protections. But anyway, I'm mm-hmm. wondering how essential workers feel if they do not feel safe at work but yet are required to because they have no protections because their employer still calls the shots.
Right, right. You raise some very critical questions, and one is, first is essential workers, you know, how that is defined, and from where I'm sitting, when I think essential workers, then I would think essential workers need to be protected, and labor laws ought to protect them. They ought to be able to challenge their those who are their employers if they are not working in safe environment. And what power do these essential workers have?
This is a new area. And I, you know, as one of the employees who has an employer who said, hey, you know, we'll provide you masks when we get them. We will provide you the ability to sanitize your workspace and we'll try to space you out. But we work in an open shop by which social distancing is possible, but we still share common computers to enter work information. We still use the same facility as a whole. So this idea of protecting someone during a pandemic like this is all but impossible in certain circumstances, short of being able to work at home in your own space. But it's just this interesting thing that I'm wondering how it's going to unfold. Because ultimately, short of having the right to say, you know what, I do not want to work during this period of time, and having protections like maybe unemployment or other issues, I don't have the financial ability to just say, I don't want to go to work today, no matter how I feel. And yet, if my employer can't guarantee that protection, like, is would that be akin to working in a hostile environment? I don't know. It's just a question. But thank you for the conversation this morning.
Hey, thank you, Bill. Okay. And be safe out there. Thank you for your work. What he's just talking about so-called essential workers. And one thing I wanted to ask was, were the workers in his place organized? What I'm seeing in these times in many different places are workers who are facing situation that Bill mentioned, whether or not their workplace is safe or not, whether or not their employees are providing them masks and things that will protect them, and the need for workers to continue organizing in different stages in our country's history. There have been moments when workers have stood up and say, we need to organize to protect ourselves. That is beginning to happen in many different essential, quote unquote, workplaces. And maybe, again, it's related to, is this pandemic an opportunity to address not only the health inequalities, the social health inequalities in our society, whether or not laborers, workers are able to organize to protect themselves and to protect those people that they work with. We are all appreciate this new awareness of workers. And I hope that someday that when we get to the other side, that we're able to remember that essential workers are those who are cleaning our bedpans, or those who are transporting us from place to place, that are people who are checking our groceries, or people who are working with those in nursing homes. Oftentimes, the lowest paid workers, who are often get up early in the morning to ride crowded buses and transportation, or walking many miles to arrive at work, to do some work that we take for granted. Maybe this is a moment for us to look and say, if they are essential, then social justice should be a part of the should be a part of our discussions. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. You are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO.
And Cecil, I just want to let you know we have another caller on the line, Evie.
Okay, and we have another caller. So let's go to, I believe, is it Amy?
It's Evie.
Hello. My name is Evie, or Edith, and I'm calling because I am a state designated essential worker, and I can address the issue about union representation. In 2000, the Oregon voters chose to create the Oregon Home Care Commission so we would get better value and services per Medicaid dollar. Instead of having people lose their homes and go into a nursing home where the quality of care results in people's quality of life going way down, and their health being far worse, they could be in their home, have dignity and agency and decision making, and have trained people. State taxes would and federal taxes would go to do far greater good with less money. So the home care workers have mandatory training and are paid $15 an hour to take the training, and would have tests, whatever food they've, you know, had it. And the workers would have SEIU, Service Employee International Union Representation, and the employers, the recipients of Medicaid, would be the bosses. They would select and choose who they want, can fire them or whatever, and they would be able to look through a statewide registry referral and choose who they want with what kind of skills and what areas and, you know, preferences.
Yeah.
And this is a win-win for taxpayers, for the workers, and for the people receiving care, and for their family members. Now, SEIU has been a law that we need to have protective services. So the Aging, Disability, and Veteran Services are supposed to provide these home care workers with latex nitrile-like exam gloves, and as needed, the masks. But the state has been breaking its requirements. So the union has got a letter of agreement with the state that they will soon provide more protections for these folks who are safer in their homes than they would be in nursing homes. We are getting better value, and we're cutting the transmission by having this. However, home care workers cannot come if the elderly and children that they are caring for at home don't have school or fund child care. So we're trying to get child care for the home care workers so they can go to the homes. And we're trying to get masks, which the state and the federal government are denying us to have. So some of us are sewing masks that can be hot washed, dry, reused, that will have an insert, like an envelope, that you can add more additional, like HEPA vacuum cleaner or machine washable lining that can add protection. And we're wanting everyone else who is a taxpayer to let the governor know, and our state legislative servants to know, we need to have those masks provided, and we need to have respite care, and we need to have child care for our home care workers. These are for children with disabilities, right, or elderly, and these are often the poorest. And the people who are providing these services are generally women, immigrants, yes, and people poor, or people who have suffered disabilities in their past or now have that empathy and the skills to help others. We also right. want you to tell the state that we need to have the ongoing training, and we need to have respite care, and we need to have more hours authorized. The department, the DHS caseworkers for the Medicaid recipients, who are employers of the home care workers, can only have so many authorized hours. But now we need to have more authorized hours for those who are needing us to go shopping, because we have to wait longer to distance ourselves from people. And we have to take longer. We've always been cleaning and sterilizing surfaces and everything, but now with distance, social distancing and additional stuff, it may depend upon the employer or client. It may take more hours that need to be authorized. It would be a cheaper investment for taxpayers than to pay for the deaths and the funeral or the hospitalization for these people. So the best bang for the tax dollar, the most humane, the most kind, and it provides the caring, nurturing, social connection that prevents the loneliness, which itself can kill.
That's right. That's right. Edie, I just appreciate so much you're sharing this morning, and I know from personal experience the value of home healthcare workers, and just reminding us that these people who are doing the work that needs to be done, they might need assistance for care for their children. So,
for example, there was one woman who for 6 weeks was not around any of her children or family members because she didn't want them to infect her for her client, and she didn't want her client employer to infect her children. So there is a lot of suffering on the part of these compassionate, empathetic, courageous, sacrificing, loyal people who are unseen heroes, where classism, racism, xenophobia is against the most essential people, workers, mm-hmm. who are, as immigrants, being denied resources. And some of these immigrant home care workers were doctors in their other country.
Yeah, country. Uh-huh. Wow. Wow. Thank you so much for calling and for lifting up these unsung heroes in our community and reminding us how much we can do to help support them they can support us.
Masks, you could bring your sewn fabric masks to the SEIU Union Hall. There's SEIU 503, which is at Foster and Holgate and 64th. Okay. And there's 54, one at 26, yeah, near 26th and Powell, south of Cleveland High School. So you could bring in, zip in, you know, sterilized, already machine wash them before you do it, sterilized, uh-huh. and then put in Ziploc bags, calling SEIU, telling them you're going to deliver them, and they could distribute them to the home care workers.
Great, great. Thank you so much for that. That gives us something to do and how to help. Thank you. Thank you so much, Edie. That's great. Bye-bye now. So as Edie just shared with us in terms of the work of one element, one portion of essential workers, home health care workers, and what you can do in addition to advocating that they are treated well and paid and benefits. But in terms of helping make masks, and you can make them, put them in Ziploc bags, and deliver them to SEIU, one on 64th and Holgate, I think, or 26 in Powell, but look it up. Something you can do. You can just spending time in your house by yourself and watching movie streaming can only go so far. So sew some masks to help some people. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We have a few minutes left. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO. We began our morning by just reflecting on how this pandemic is affecting communities that are suffering. Poor working communities, communities of indigenous black, brown people, those are the communities that are most adversely impacted by this pandemic and things that we can do. We've mentioned, Edie just mentioned something those people can do in all your communities in terms of supporting home healthcare workers and just I just want to thank Edie for just sharing and also the other callers who call, one who caters, who make sure that food gets to hospitals and stuff like that. These people who are now called essential workers, and we need to continue to advocate for them and that they are treated fairly and adequately and that they are able to help us in our society. Continue to advocate for one another and wait. You know, I know you're 64 and you don't want to be talked down to as a child, but I think it needs to be repeated over and over again how we need to be safe and look out for one another. So, you know, if you've heard it before, that's okay. Someone else hasn't heard it, and we live in a society where many people need to hear things in many different ways. If you stay tuned, and I hope you will stay tuned to KBOO, you can get your latest information on COVID-19 and where you can go to donate things such as masks and other equipment and how to spread and how to volunteer in many different ways. So stay tuned here to KBOO, More Talk Radio. Coming up right after this show on Monday is the OMO Variety Hour. Stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for many programs that are here right now. I want to thank those who are involved in community radio and doing all sorts of things and just doing incredible things. I want to thank my engineer, and I didn't get your name.
Cecil, my name's Michael.
Michael.
Yes.
Okay, Michael.
Thank you so much, Cecil.
Thank you, Michael, for doing all of this. And I want to give a shout out to my co-host Celeste and hope she is doing better and she gets some rest today. And we'll be with you next week here on KBOO. But in the meantime, stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour. And in no way, I'm not going to tell you to wash your hands for 20 seconds. You know, do the right thing. Thank you for listening to More Talk Radio. I will hear from you next week on your community radio station, KBOO.
And that was More Talk Radio right here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomena at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River on 91.9. Here's a little bit of weather for you this morning. A chilly start to your Monday. Much of the valley is seeing early temps in the 30s. This afternoon, we will see Portland highs warm into the upper 60s with variable winds at 5 to 15 miles per hour. We hit 70 degrees or better 3 consecutive days last week and will probably notch a 70-degree high this Thursday and Friday. There is no rain in the forecast, and at least through Friday, which is becoming a topic of concern. We're a third of the way through April, and we've measured just 0.18 at PDX. And that's your weather for today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, we have more for you right here on KBOO 90.7 FM.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, KBOO will be sticking to our regularly scheduled programming as much as possible, but there are some limitations that we're working with, so we appreciate your understanding and support. We are committed to keeping our staff, volunteers, and programmers safe and healthy, so we are transitioning to producing programs remotely. For updates on KBOO's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, visit our website at kboo.fm/COVID-19. That's KBOO.
Join us on Prison Pipeline at 6:30 p.m. on April 13th to find out what people incarcerated in Oregon prisons and jails are experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll discuss ways you can help prisoners and their families. And from all of